What's your earliest memory?
Like, what's the very first thing you recall?
I've been thinking about this, and I'm trying to think. I don't remember if it was a... Is it a color? Like, a sense of something? Sound? Is there... And so I think, okay, what's my first memory? I remember my brother being there. Wait a minute. We were probably 5 years old. Good Lord, you got to have a memory that goes back further than five. But I don't remember being in diapers. And I just... Man, it's just warping my mind. What's your earliest first memory? And you'll talk to some people and they'll say, well, I remember when I was 9 months old. No, you don't. I contest that you do not remember what happened in your world when you were 9 months old. But I am curious about these first memories. And I, by the way, I'm Chris Story filling in for Mr. Michael Dukes here on AM 700 KBYR, the Michael Dukes Show. Mr. Eric Price is your engineer producer back out of the mothership of KBYR. AM 700 on Facebook, online, everywhere. Michael Dukes is celebrating the birth of a brand new grandbaby. I'm ahead of him by three. Proud to say that. But, you know, hey, first arrival, I guess you could call me, I'm indigenous to grandparenting as compared to Michael Dukes. I am first people in that place. It's not very many communities I belong to, but I do belong to that one. So thank you for joining me today. But, yeah, just woke up with this on my mind. What is your earliest first memory? Like, what would it be? And so I was thinking about it. And all of mine, this is embarrassing, but I think I can tell you this. I think that we have enough rapport together, you and I, that I can tell you my first memories are associated with food. What's wrong with it? Come on. I also should tell you I'm of the obese community, so I can discuss that. But I of the formerly obese community. So it's another community I belong to. But yeah, that's all of the memories, all of these first memories that as I was forcing myself to think. And then I realized you can't force yourself to remember stuff like this. You have to relax into it. You have to just sort of like let your mind drift and wander. And suddenly that's when I started thinking about, oh, I remember this incredible buffet when I was, wait a minute, come on, you're 4-year-old remembering a buffet? What's wrong with you? You should be thinking about the time that you cut your finger the first time or played with Play-Doh or silly putty. I don't know. Anyway, these are the kinds of things that I wake up and think about. It's going to be an incredible program. I'm really excited. And I understand that you probably have a life outside of just me, that you and I probably will spend a certain amount of time together today. But I want to tell you that we have an incredible guest lineup. We've got Devin Thomas, president of the Alaska Association of Realtors. She'll be here during the 7 o'clock hour, along with Rhonda Johnson. Rhonda Johnson is the president and CEO of Cornerstone Home Lending here in Alaska. We're going to be talking about how you can rule the world with credit. I mean, credit is huge, and you can make millions and millions of dollars by playing this game correctly and using credit, and that's at the key of it all. It really is. Whether you're using traditional mortgages to acquire real estate, or you're using private financing, or just want to live a life and get an apartment and maybe buy a car and get some decent insurance, well, credit matters. Liz Raines with KTVA is going to be here. We're going to find out what's going on around Alaska. Also, a very special guest, Suzanne Downing, Must Read Alaska. She is the proprietrix of MustReadAlaska.com, an incredible blog that if you care at all about what's happening in Alaska, you are plugged into Must Read Alaska. She and I were on a media literacy panel here recently, and I want to talk to her about a little bit. We'll touch on some of the news and so forth, obviously, but mainly what I want to talk to Liz about, and this will be in the 8 o'clock hour, is media literacy. What is fake news? What is news? What is journalism? And elitism. I mean, you know that. There's elitism in everything in life, and journalism is no exception. And I think that was on massive display on the panel that Liz or Suzanne and I participated on. So Suzanne Downing coming up, and then we'll also have a segment of Radio Realty, Live Like You're Selling. This is a life and death segment. No exaggeration. A life and death segment. I'm not suggesting that, like at the old news deals, you know, it's like what you're about to have for dinner could kill your entire family. News 11. No! Tell me now! Well, this is a life and death situation, and so I want to share that with you. It's called Radio Realty, Live Like You're Selling. And more, a lot more coming up. I've got a couple of interesting questions about the PFD. I would like your take on the permanent fund, and there's a couple of things that I've been thinking about there. Also, our good old friend Les Guerra makes news again. You just can't make up some of the stuff he says. He can, but you couldn't. And then SB 91 crime on my mind a lot. So I want to talk about all of these things, and to ensure, of course, also that you and I are living on top of the world here on the Michael Duke Show, KBYR. So a couple of things, though. Maybe this would be a really good way for you and I to dip our toes into the pool together this morning, besides thinking about your earliest memory. Hey, Eric, what's the earliest memory you've got in your giant mind? Can you think of, like, something from before 2 or 3 or 4? Well, what's the earliest memory
really
for you?
You know, it's really strange. My Aunt Patricia, it's me and 3 other kids. I'm the oldest of her nieces and nephews. And she used to film us a lot as kids playing around the house. And I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There was this big pecan tree outside. We'd go picking pecans. And, you know, she wanted to keep those videos. People don't do that anymore, really. They just walk around their cell phone. She had this big, giant VHS camera. She would, you know, get these videos. And so as I grew up, we would go back and watch these videos. And I realized that at a certain point, and I think I was discussing something with my mom, and I was telling her something about when I was little, and she was like, "Yeah, there's no way you remember that." I know I do. And there was this video of me. We had this old rotary dial phone on the wall, and I was picking it up and pretending to talk on it. My mom would tell me to hang it up, and I would put it in the air, put it up, you know, not hanging it up, and then I would continue to talk on it. But I think I was like. Maybe a year old, but I'd seen that video a lot growing up. My aunt would show it to other family members that would visit and things, and I think that sort of embedded itself as a memory to me that wasn't actually a memory. But I think some of my earliest actual memories that I can think of are starting school and really not liking it.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason
triggered something.
And I think one of the biggest reasons that I know that is because I can still associate certain smells and certain weather types and certain buildings, certain ways buildings feel and smell. I think I associated that with this school I went to, and I really disliked the fact that I had to start going to school. I really didn't want to go, and I still get weird nostalgic feelings about it with certain things.
Oh, that's interesting. You just triggered in me. By the way, you are listening to the Michael Duke Show. It might sound a little bit different than normal. I'm Chris Story, filling in for the big guy today. That was Eric Price, and we're talking about your earliest memory. You just triggered something with me, Eric, and that is going to school. That may be because that would have been preschool, so that'd be probably 4, maybe 5. Michael Duke went to preschool at 1. He's, of course, a more advanced intellect than the rest of us. But that said, I remember driving, and I can remember going around this one particular corner here in Homer, which is where I grew up, and I can remember sitting there looking at this little backpack, and I had like a bear on it, and I remember just bursting into tears. And so, yeah, so thanks a lot, because what you've done, you probably knew this, maybe you even spoke to my brother, Eric, but you've just psychologically broken me, because all of those first years of going to school, I did not want to go to school. I remember first grade, second grade, third grade. I remember just fourth grade going to a new school and going to the secretary's office with a stomach ache so my mom could come pick me up. That's bizarre. You've just triggered a lot of things that will cause me to have to go see my counselor this afternoon. It's 16 minutes after the 6 o'clock hour. Thank you for being here on the Michael Duke Show. I want to be able to help you if we can't get to the root of your deepest, darkest emotional memories. Let's figure out how to get along with everybody. And I can just hear it. No, bear with me. I don't mean get along with everybody like, can't we all just get along and everybody just placate each other? No, I'm talking about a real technology. I'm talking about a tool. What if I could hand you a tool and say, with this tool, you will feel less or no stress when, God forbid, you're on Facebook or looking at news, or you're following a comment thread about crime in Alaska, or you're following something going on online, you're reading the news, you hear something that the president said or didn't say, something that Mitch McConnell said or something that Les Guerra said or something that you wish had been said. Governor Walker's come out with something. Whatever it is, tax-related, I'm talking about anything and everything, neighbors, traffic, talking about anything and everything. What if you had a tool, and when you used this tool, you reduced your blood pressure, you felt very little, if any, stress in life at all. It's a philosophy. So I call it a tool because I can visualize physically holding something and saying, okay, I can use this. I can take this and apply it. It's like a wrench or a sledgehammer. You know what I'm saying about the sledgehammer, a little persuasion in an argument. But how to avoid arguing, how to win every single debate, and it's called the poet, philosopher, warrior. This is the tool. That's it. It's PPW, poet, philosopher, warrior. What I do is I categorize all human beings fall into one of three categories. That's it. You could even refine it down to two. I like the three, and I'll tell you why. There are poets amongst us. You know the poets. You know who they are? They're artist types. They're very emotional. They're creatives. That's the kind of, okay, there are people in this world that they're here to create. They're here to be emotive. They're here to be somebody who paints. Maybe they sculpt. Maybe they are writers. They're just fiction writers. They're creative people that are delicate. And that's okay. I don't need to change them. I just need to understand when I'm talking to somebody, oh, got it, you're a poet. And I don't say it to them. I just recognize and acknowledge in my mind, ah, yes, they are a poet. And then you have philosophers. They're the type that have theories on everything, don't accomplish a whole lot, love to talk about it, love to get elected. You find a lot of philosophers in the legislature. And usually congressman or senator or an underling within love to sit there and round table stuff. Oh, man, you get them involved in a think tank. Forget about it. These are the philosophers in the world, and they exist. They are among us. They're everywhere. And it's, you know, again, the biggest thing I look for is what are they accomplishing? If it's not a lot, but there's a lot of like dust kicked up around them and talking and constantly moving their mouths. Oh, we should do a white paper on that. You're dealing with a philosopher. Then you have a warrior, action oriented. They get it done. They get the job done. You got a tough job. You give it to a warrior. They take charge. And if they're going to get elected, guess what? They're going to be a leader. They're not going to be somebody caucusing amongst another 400 or 300 people. No, they're the leader. They're the governor. They're the president. Maybe vice president. Al Gore's the exception to that. but seriously, what if you divided the world into three and said that you're talking to, engaging with, doing business with, married to, riding an Uber with, elected, you just elected, or you're watching a debate between certain candidates, and they are either a poet, a philosopher, or a warrior. And to me, in my mind, it removes all the stress. I am no longer under stress when I think in terms of the world this way. I think in terms of just simply it's a matter of, okay, I'm comfortable. I am absolutely comfortable understanding who you are and what you're all about. That to me, that solves everything. And I'll tell you how I apply it in business. I'll tell you how I apply it into my relationships and everything else. So basically it's kind of where I'm at in the world here. Hang on a second. I just got a message here. There we go. See, this is all happening. Michael Dukes leaves and things begin to fall apart. Not with Eric Price in the studio. Eric Price is going to take care of business. I'm Christopher Story. You are listening to the Michael Dukes Show. And I think this is going to be an incredible day. I really, really thank Michael Dukes for giving me the opportunity to take the reins. I'm Chris Story, along with Eric Price, here on KBYR AM 700. Made some incredibly strong black coffee this morning. How are you? I'm Christopher Story, your host for Great Adventures in This Last Frontier, filling in for Mr. Michael Dukes, 25 minutes after 6 o'clock hour here on AM 700. KBYR. Eric Price is your producer and engineer back up at the mothership of KBYR.com here at AM 700 KBYR. Have you missed me? I've missed you. I really did enjoy those several months you and I spent together, and I enjoy my every Tuesday with Mr. Dukes and Mr. Price. It's a great radio station, AM 700. I'm glad you're here. I really enjoy it myself, and great programming. Big question on my mind right now for you at 274-5297. Feel free to call in 274-5297. That's KBYR, 866-610-5297, 866-610-KBYR. Question, what would you sell out for? Would you sell out your PFD for all future PFDs? If you got a check for what would it take? and you'd be satisfied. You'd never get another PFD check again. That's it. I don't know the mechanics of how what would happen to the rest of it. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about you and me, just to buy us off, because that's what it would be, just to get rid of us so they could take the rest of it and spend it on you know, the ferries and the trains and, you know, the gas line, everything. I'm talking about you and me. What would it take to just get rid of us? For me, it's $50K. I want $50,000 each for me and my wife. So it's $100,000 to my family. I should have done this when I had my kids at home. What's going on here? But yeah, I'd like $50,000. Now, can I tell you a secret? I'd probably settle. I'd probably take less than that, but I want to start there. Don't tell Governor Walker or anybody else in Juneau. But yeah, I mean, I would take $50,000, and I would turn it into $1 million, and I would use real estate to do it. And I just think that's the most logical thing. But I would take my $50,000. I would take my wife's – well, I wouldn't take my wife's $50,000. She would take our $100,000 and turn it into $1 million of real estate here in Alaska. And because I believe in Alaska, and it's not that I want to sell out, but I'm curious. You know, I mean, you've heard of this before. I remember the number was, I think, $25,000 is being floated around. And I don't know how serious it's ever been of just buying out Alaskans. And, where, you know, at what point would you have to have been an Alaskan to even qualify for that? But what's your number? 274-5297, KBYR. I'm curious. I'd love to hear from you. What is the number that it would take for you to say, forget about it? I don't need no stinking PFD check anymore. It's, I don't know. It's open for you to call in if you want to and talk about that. 274-5297. Now, I got a text from a friend during the news break there and said, Terry says, well, can't you be a combination? And what he means is how to get along with everybody. We discussed poet, philosopher, warrior philosophy. And yes, Terry, you're absolutely right. You can absolutely be a combination. You can either be a poet, a philosopher, or a warrior, or you can be, let's just say that you're a warrior philosopher. Maybe you're somebody who is action oriented. You do get the job done. You're sort of you're a tough, take charge kind of person. You're a leader type, and yet you are philosophical about it. You're not just a brute. You know, you've got some brain. You've got some, you know, some real deep thinking happening there. Some deep thoughts by Jack Candy. You actually are cogitating on the theory of warfare, or the theory of leadership, or the theory of what it is you're setting out to do, not just actually, you know, running roughshod. So yeah, you can absolutely be sort. I guess I would, to borrow from the DISC theory, the DIC theory, DISC theory. I say, okay, you could be a strong warrior with a minor in philosophy. You could have or maybe a poet philosopher. And I will tell you this, myself personally, here's how I see myself. And I don't know how the world sees me. And that matters when you're trying to get along with everybody. It is good to look at how the world sees you. And when I say get along with everybody, I do not mean as a pacifist or a pansy, somebody that can get manipulated. That's not what I mean. Not a spineless amoeba. I'm talking about somebody who can see their way through, almost like in The Matrix. Once they understood what was happening, I get it. I see what's happening here. This is the wake-up call that I had when I discovered this technology. This is me. I see myself as a warrior, of course, right? We probably all do to a certain extent. But I see myself as a warrior philosopher with a little bit of a poet going on in there, because I am an artist. I consider myself a creative as well, but I read every single morning. I get up and will read for an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. On the weekends, I'll get up even an hour earlier. Sometimes I get up at 3:30 on the weekend or 4 o'clock. If I'm into an incredible book, I cannot wait to brew an incredibly strong pot of coffee and sit down with this book. And then at the same time, though, I do get stuff done. I'm a leader. I couldn't imagine being employed. I'm unemployable. I literally am unemployable at this stage of my life. And that's obstinance to a certain extent, but also because I gotta be the leader. Where I'm at, I've got to be leading the situation. And so yeah, it's a combination, Terry. It's a good question. Eric, we know each other a little bit. I'd love to hear you. What do you think you are? Are you a poet, a philosopher, a warrior? And then just for the little bit you know me, how do you see me? But let's start with you, Eric. What are you?
If I had to pick any of those, I'd say a poet, just because I find my happiness in attempting to write music, which is, I suppose, a form of poetry, if you want to.
And artistry, absolutely.
Yeah, if you want to break it down. I do a lot of drawings and paintings and stuff. I don't really do it for any other reason other than I like doing it. And, yeah, but I, you know, I've ran businesses, I've had my own businesses, I've managed businesses, and I am definitely more comfortable there, but I've also found a place in my life in a job that I don't necessarily need to be the boss. I kind of am left with my own tools and can do the things that I want to do, but I definitely have had a hard time with being overly managed by people, and that's been difficult in my professional career. But I would say, for the most part, I would say day to day, the things that I do most revolve around kind of creating art and writing and reading. And I read a lot. Some would say I read too much.
There's no such thing. You can't read too much.
When I put off social things to sit and, because I'm sucked into a book. But yeah, and I think from your from the things I know about you, I definitely think you would fall into that poet category. In being a creative and an artistic type with your tea bowls that I've yet to receive one of.
Right, there's a subtle. I kind of knew that was coming. I walked right into that. It's interesting though. I mean, what I'm getting at is that I think that we are a combination of these things. But it helps me as I talk to people, or I look at the news, or I'm surrounded by, and so are you, to be frank. I mean, we all are in Alaska and or America. 50% of the people we encounter have an opposite ideological view of the world. And and it's difficult sometimes when you're dealing with somebody who's extremely emotive, or somebody who is so pedantic in their thinking, they're going to criticize every grammatical error in your sentence because they can hear that the comma came to, you know what I mean? That's like, what is wrong with you? And then there's the type that are just bullying you over with their bravado, etc. And for me to recognize and break people down and say, oh, wait a minute, okay, I get it. I'm not angry. I'm not upset with you. You're being your nature. You're a poet philosopher. Okay, so you don't understand leadership, or you don't really have the capability to lead. I get that. Or somebody like you, Eric, who you are, you fall into that category. You said yourself, you've sort of self-analyzed as a strong poet, with also, though, you lean towards that warrior side of you, which would be the person that runs the business or would create a business, or be frankly the kind of guy that says, hey, get off my back, don't micromanage me.
Sure. Which I have to do with Dukes quite frequently.
Oh man, I can't even. This has got to be a vacation for both of you, to be frank. All right. Thank you so much for participating in that, Eric. And I wanted to talk to you about a guy named Og Mandino. So Eric and I were just talking about books. We both like to read. One of my favorite writers in the world, his name is Og Mandino. He's passed away now. One of the handful of people that I consider to be part of my roundtable, people that I go to constantly, even though he's gone. I don't need him to be here. I've never met him, but I would love to have. Og Mandino wrote a series of books. One was called The Greatest Salesman in the World. Another one was called The Greatest Miracle in the World. And then there's a whole host of others. Those were his two most popular. But he had an idea that you and I were a walking, talking miracle. And I set out to prove that to you. By the way, I want to remind you, coming up on the Michael Duke Show in a little bit, we have the president of the Alaska Association of Realtors. Her name is Devin Thomas with Century 21. We're going to be talking about the three most misunderstood aspects of buying real estate. Remember, if we're going to get that PFD payout, we need to be able to buy our way into a fortune, into at least $1 million. And I can prove to you that we can do it. We can make our $50,000 payoff turn into $1 million. Rhonda Johnson with Cornerstone Home Lending of Alaska. She's going to be talking about how you can rule the world with credit. Liz Raines with KTVH. She's going to be telling us what's going on around Alaska. And Suzanne Downey, the publisher of Must Read Alaska, will be talking about media literacy and elitism in media nationwide, and Radio Realty. Live like you're selling. This is a life and death segment. All of that coming up. To prove to you that you are a miracle, Og Mandino would say, he actually wrote this book. It's called, again, The Greatest Miracle in the World. And spoiler alert, if you haven't read it, it's you. So you're reading this book, and it's a thin read. It's a great read. It's a good book. But you are the greatest miracle in the world. So you're reading this book and it ends with a letter from God, and you do not have to be identifying with religion to understand what he's saying. You can consider it source or universality or the universe. You can consider this a letter from your creator, or you can just say it's a letter from the universal, but a letter from God. And he says, I endowed you with the powers unknown
to any other creature in the universe. God says to you, universe says to you, I gave you the power to think, love, the power to will. That's huge. Laugh. Besides a hyena, who else can laugh? Imagine. Create. I gave you the power to plan, speak, and pray. Your very existence is a miracle. Isn't that so true? I just absolutely identify with that. Think about, just break down the power to will. And I think in our society, we've destroyed the word discipline. We have created such a stigma around the word discipline. But if you think of it in terms of the power to will, to force yourself to control the will, your own will, your free will, is there's probably nothing greater than that. Another great book on that entire, just that one subject right there, is called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. The power to will or discipline oneself and survive through a concentration camp like Viktor Frankl did, not one but two, Dachau and Auschwitz. Can you imagine the power of will that it would have taken to harness and survive that and come out not hating the world or yourself or your captor? He had the power to will. You have right now the power to laugh, imagine, create. These things are so incredibly unique to you. You can't deny that you are a miracle and you matter. And I think that's the one thing that you and I have in common. You and the bum on the street, you and the president of the United States, you and every single human being on earth, we have one thing that really is significant about ourselves that is just completely unique to human species, but also ubiquitous to all of us, and that is that we want to matter. Somebody said recently, and I can't remember, where did I hear this? Maybe it was something I read, but it was something about, I want the world to know I came this way. And so, well, what are you doing about that? What are you doing about that? If you want the world to know you came this way, and we all do, everybody, it's a matter of significance. It's a matter of meaning in your life, finding that purpose and living on purpose, and it's available to you. Ogmandino said it here so eloquently. You are a miracle because of these powers invested in you. Now, they've been invested. That doesn't mean that you're growing capital. That doesn't mean that you're getting interest rate of return on this. You know, I mean, you don't have to use your ability to imagine or will or plan or pray, but I hope you do. And I hope that each of us are recognizing that we are that miracle. And how will the world know you came this way? And so that kind of goes back to, what are you creating? Can you imagine a world where you've made a difference in somebody else's life today? And I encourage you to do that. I gave a speech recently where that was the entire topic. It was their theme of their conference happened to be Dream, Believe, Achieve. I love that concept, obviously. If you've ever listened to On Top of the World Radio, you know that. And this idea that little things you say, you can plant a seed. I want to tell you a story about a little girl and her grandpa. I want to tell you that story, what happened and how that changed my life. And the story that changed everything and how it can possibly even change your life. And so that, I'll tell you that when we come back. That's pretty moving. Pretty moving. I'm Chris Story, filling in for Michael Dukes. You're listening to The Michael Dukes Show here on AM 700 KBYR. We'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere. What's your number? 50 grand is my number. That's what I would take. Yeah, what would it take for you to give up any future PFD? No claim to the PFD ever again. You don't even think about it. It never occurs to you again. $50,000. Give me a check today, and I'm gone tomorrow. Well, I mean, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm going to go invest it. Eric Price is your producer and engineer at KBYR.com. Thank you for being here, Mr. Price. Thank you for listening to the show today, even in Michael's absence. Substitute teacher is what I like to think of it. So feel free to chime in. 274-5297-274-KBYR. What would be your number? In fact, let's take a call now. Rodney's on the line. Good morning, Rodney. What's your number?
Good morning, Chris. Doing a great job there filling in for Michael. I'm with you. I would say 50,000. You look at what they've done, cutting it basically in half. You look at oil prices, the future of oil prices, years remaining, you know, $1,000 basically a year for the next 50 years, even for children. I think that's a pretty fair number. And furthermore, it's, you know, a lot of people are, it's funny, I had a debate with somebody a few years ago, and I said politicians were going to find a way to get their hands on that money, and they argued and said, no, it's a constitutional issue, this, that, and the other. And I said, if you think that money's going to be sitting there and they won't find a way to get their hands on it, you're crazy. And 2 years later, you know, Governor Walker found a way to do just that. And it's not really about it, you know, they'll always find the judge to rule in favor of what they want. So I think that would be fair to everyone in my household to get 50,000, because eventually, I hate to say it, unfortunately, it's going to be nothing. So,
yeah. Well, and you know, you could look at the lockbox of the Social Security system, and that should have forecast and foreshadowed to all of us what was going to happen. I mean, there's a way to get nothing is really secure. Rodney, let me ask you this, and you feel free to pass on the question, but I am curious as to what would you do with the money? And if you don't want to outline it completely, that's fine, but I'm just curious, what would you do with the money then?
I would absolutely invest it, as you said, with diversifying some real estate. I still think there's a bright future for Alaska if we get the right administration and get politicians to really wake up and see and do what's best for this state. There's a bright future in real estate, always will be in Alaska, but I would invest and diversify and, like you, take that money and build it towards a great retirement, because I know, you know, 6 days a week and twice on Sunday that I can do more and better with that money than the government can, for sure.
Exactly. Bingo. And I think that's exactly the point. I think that's any of us that are having this conversation, be it, you know, philosophical or otherwise, I think it's worth having and making the point that you know exactly how to spend your money. And by and large, I think people would spend it locally. Some people would bug out and take off and that would exit like a fire hose, leave the state. But I think that would be the minority. I think a majority of us would stay and invest that money locally. And I found out, I'm late to the game, Rodney. I found out that the money you and I didn't get last year, that 50% of the dividend we did not get, stayed in the earnings reserve. It's like, what is going on here? So that's unstimulated. I mean, that's absolutely the most regressive tax I could imagine. This would be a huge advancement forward. So thank you for sharing, Rodney, and I appreciate your compliment on the program as well. Stick around.
Thanks, Chris.
You got it. Feel free to chime in, 274-5297. I knew Michael had the smartest audience in the world, 274-5297. We've just confirmed that with Rodney. We're happy to take your call as well. A little girl was sitting in the bleachers. It's a beautiful, crisp fall day, gorgeous blue sky, green grass, incredible day. She was watching a football game with her grandpa. It was homecoming. The team, not NFL, we're talking about a high school team, took to the field. And it was going to be an incredible game. I mean, I was so excited. Little girl was eating a bag of popcorn, and she ran out of popcorn. She said to her grandpa, she pulled at his sleeve and said, "Grandpa, Grandpa, I'm out of popcorn. I'm out of popcorn." And grandpa says nothing. He didn't say anything. He's watching the game. He's watching the game like he's speaking through, you know, mental telepathy to the coach and the quarterback. Anyway, finally, the little girl asked again, "Grandpa, Grandpa, I want more popcorn." And the grandpa looked at her and said something that changed my life, that literally changed my life. The grandpa looked at her square in the eyes, big, beautiful little hazel eyes. She had, not him. And he said, "You don't get what you want in this life. Get used to it." And as I just told you that, the hair on the back of my neck stood. I can feel his comment. I don't just hear it. I feel it. I can smell the air. I can hear the sounds of the game around me, and I can feel his comment. And I've been telling that little girl, wherever she's at now, for the last, probably 12 years ago, yes, you can. You can get whatever you want. Roy is on the line. Good morning, Roy. What's your number? What would it take to buy your soul out of the PFD?
Well, I wouldn't sell my soul, but I'd probably settle for at least the $50,000 to $100,000. But it's got a caveat. It's got to not be taxed. Once I get my money, you keep your little grubby mitts off of my money, because they're robbing us right here. And now I understand what's the matter with them legislators. If they're all philosophers and like to sit around, they ain't doing squat except warming their butts.
Exactly. Oh, Roy, this is awesome. I love that. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, because I think I can be. I settled with I had a very, very, very big line of credit here a couple of years ago with a bank. And it was a good line of credit. We did a lot of things with it. We were remodeling properties. And, you know, we kept this line of credit revolving and going. And then they said to me, this large national bank said to me, by the way, we're no longer extending line of credit, yada, yada, we're calling this due. And so what I ended up doing was negotiating with them. And I negotiated with them on a settled deal. And I said, look, I'll pay you cash right now for this. Let's negotiate down. We negotiated down. And what I saved in that phenomenal negotiation, because I used my philosopher warrior skills, and I was able to negotiate a really good buy down on this thing, I got taxed on the difference. So Roy, your point is incredible, but you got a big swing there between 50 and 100,000. Can you justify the 100,000?
Well, I'm going to be retiring soon because I've gotten outsourced for my job after 20-plus years in it. And I'm looking at retirement because I'm going to be 64, and I just don't see competing with all the young people that are out here. I'm in the tech field. I'm in IT.
Oh, okay.
If you understand what the acronym means, information technology. And I'm just totally disgusted with these idiots in there. I mean, they let the inmates in the insane asylum run the place here. I mean, I'm just totally tired of this. And constitutionally, it says you shall, you know, disperse this money to the people here. And they're doing this. They're robbing. Personally, I think they should all be arrested, along with Governor Walker.
Wait a minute, Roy, hold on, calm down. You said it yourself, they're philosophers. We don't get mad at them. We understand them.
Right. Say, okay, I guess I'm more of the lawyer type here. I want to just kick butt and take names, you know.
I love it. You got my vote, Roy. But let me ask you this, though. You mentioned Governor Walker. You threw him into the mix there. I've never seen him as a warrior type or a leader type. I see him as somebody who will make concessions and try to 50-50 win-win on everything. And I think he's a good man with a good heart. But that said, let me ask you, did you support him in his bid for governor?
No.
Bad. Okay.
Let's throw in another little quick story here. During colony days this summer here in Palmer, he walked down the street waving at people. You could hear the silence as he walked down the street. Some people actually, I was sitting there because I was standing on the side of the sidewalk. I did not wave to this man. I didn't make a sound, but I watched people actually either get really upset with their facial expressions or they just turned away from him. And I'm going, okay, there's the leader of our state going down the thing, waving hands, you know, waving his hand like a typical freaking politician.
It's a queen.
Yeah, I have very little use for them people. And when they do this kind of crap down there, I'm sorry, but when they do this kind of stuff down in Juneau and don't do anything because they're sitting on their butts or they're changing the rules to suit themselves, I mean, I'm tired of it.
Yeah, Roy,
I'm glad they're all up for re-election, because every place I go to in the grocery store, I stand in line, I stand at the post office, I tell people, remember, do not vote for any of the incumbents. They did this to us. They took our permanent fund checks, half of it anyhow, that we're entitled to because we don't have mineral rights here. This is what was set up for us, and they're stealing it from us. And yet, like you said, it's in the reserve there, and they're not even using it. So, I mean, what's good is it taking it from us without
using it? With this income tax, they're
going to
come and get the other half. So, Roy, we better retire quick. I'm with you. Thank you, Roy. Appreciate you calling in today and listening to the Michael Duke Show. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
You got it. And happy retirement. I talked to somebody the other day, and they said something about getting ready to retire. And I said, oh, man, I look forward to that. The truth of the matter is, and if you're still listening, Roy, which you better be, why wouldn't you be, would love to hear sometime, you know, okay, so you retire, and then what will you do? Are you going to stick around Alaska? I mean, that'd be a good segment to do. Okay, if you could retire today, what would you do next? I mean, maybe we'll weave that into the later portion of the program. Coming up after the top of the hour news and so forth, don't forget my friend and your president, well, she's the president of the Alaska Realtors Association, so she's my president, been doing a lot of good around the state of Alaska. Her name is Devin Thomas. She's with Century 21 Realty in Eagle River. She's going to be my guest, and we're going to be talking about, I think this is a pretty important segment. I really encourage you to listen to it, the three most misunderstood aspects of buying property. Now, if we're going to get that big payout, which, by the way, it is hypothetical, but let's just say that we got that big payout. So, you know, like Roy wanted $100,000. I like that. I'm with you on that, Roy, and then we can negotiate backwards a little bit maybe, but whatever it is, 25, 50, 100 grand, can you take that money and invest it wisely yourself? Yes, first of all. Secondly, is real estate the right vehicle? Yes. Well, what do you need to know about buying? We're going to be talking with Devin Thomas about that. Another part of this would matter, I guess, is going to be your credit score. Now, because you're probably going to leverage. This is my philosophy anyway. I want to leverage that $100,000 or that $50,000 or the $25,000 that we get from our PFD payout. Like how I'm just talking about it now, like it's going to happen. Like it's a foregone conclusion. Oh, we're going to get the money. Don't you worry. We're not going to get it. But if we did, you'd want to leverage it. And if you're going to leverage it, you need to have good to decent credit. And if you're going to have good to decent credit, you need to know a little something, something about credit. So Rhonda Johnson's my friend, and she and I have been doing radio together for 10 years, a little segment we call Mortgage Moment. And so we're going to talk about credit, how to rule the world with credit. What do you need to know? And I'm the worst at it. I'll tell you something that just quickly. Rhonda Johnson helped me. I was buying an investment property. And so my wife and I were buying two properties a year. And we got to a point where we were getting ready to close on the second property. And which, by the way, I'll tell you how we did that and so forth at another time probably. But anyway, so we're buying this home. We're getting ready to close on our second home that year. And all of a sudden, Rhonda Johnson calls me up and she says, "Chris, what have you done?" And I said, "I don't know what you're talking about." She says, "Your credit tanked. I dropped like 50 points or something like that, or maybe it was 65 or 70 points. It was something pretty significant, and it was going to mean I wasn't going to get the mortgage." And I was like, "Rhonda, I have no idea what happened. What are you talking about?" As it turns out, my wife had bought me a four-wheeler. She was going to go and buy it. It was for Father's Day. She was going to go and buy it. And then the salesperson said, bless his heart, he said, "Hey, you can just get this for zero down and no interest for 7 months or 10 months or 12 months, whatever it was. Do you want to do that?" And she's like, "Oh, okay." She, you know, put her checkbook away and walked out with the title to the four-wheeler, whatever, for nothing. And we had a year to pay it. Well, it just so happened we'd made like two payments, and then the second one didn't get applied, or it got applied in once. Anyway, long story short, it looked like we hadn't made a payment on this thing that was like, oh man, it was instant disaster. Rhonda Johnson helped me out. She got it fixed, and that's what she's going to talk to us about. Plus, later in the program, Suzanne Downing with Must Read Alaska. We're going to be talking about media literacy and elitism and a special episode of Radio Realty Live Like You're Selling. It's a life and death episode. I'm Chris Story along with Eric Price. More to come here on The Michael Duke Show on AM 700 KBYR. On the program with me right now is my friend, and she's my president of the Alaska Association of Realtors. Her name, Devin Thomas. Good morning, Devin. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Fantastic. If I was any better, I would be Michael Dregge, your friend and mine.
That's true.
So, Devin, I want to get into the three most misunderstood aspects of buying, because I think it's something that you and I, as realtors and real estate licensees here in Alaska, we deal with this every day. But a little background on you. So when did Devin Thomas, was Devin Thomas a little girl and she said to herself, Mom, I want to grow up and be a realtor? Or how did you discover that you were going to be a realtor as a career?
I think like most of us, I kind of fell into it by accident. I had just graduated from college. I never really had a real job per se, and I was actually studying at the time to get my insurance license. And I had a friend that was working for a very well-known realtor in our area, that was getting ready to leave, go out on maternity leave and never intended on coming back. And so I really hated what I was studying in insurance. And I asked her, you know, do you think he would give me the opportunity to come work for him? And that guy was Kybe Lucas. And I was very blessed to meet Kybe early on in my career. And I met with him the next day. He hired me. I instantly stopped studying for my insurance exam. And the rest is kind of history. That was, I think, in 2002. I worked for him as an unlicensed assistant for about 6 months, and then I got my license.
That's fantastic. What a great story. I think that you're right when you say like most of us, because, and that's maybe one of the, if we were to just on for a moment, talk about some of the most misunderstood things about realtors. And I think in general is that it is a great opportunity for people, and it's a great group of people, and we do a lot of good things, but it's not for everybody. And you do kind of fall into it by way of association or maybe some life experience, or you meet somebody. And it's funny, I didn't realize that you and I had that in common. That's the same year, in fact, that I got licensed was in 2002. So interesting. Maybe that's why I like you so much. All right, well, let's talk about what's misunderstood about buying, the process of buying. And I think, Devin, I would throw this on the table. I think one of the most misunderstood things is that if you're buying a home, a business, a commercial property or a piece of vacant land, you, as the buyer, you don't pay anything to the realtor 99.9% of the time, I think. And do you agree? Do you think that's misunderstood quite often?
I would say it's more like 99 rather than 99.9. But yes, for the most part, buyers pay nothing for the services of a realtor.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, almost think always about everything. There's nothing else. There's nowhere else you could do this. I mean, there's no other industry where you could get the professional service for free. And I think that's something that I like to remind people of that pretty often, and that, you know, you get all of this service, you get all of the professional expertise, and virtually, I mean, it really is for free. Now, you say 99% of the time. Describe a time maybe where that would not be true.
So occasionally, maybe in a commercial transaction, or one of the most common is a for sale by owner, where perhaps the owner that is unrepresented doesn't want to participate in helping out with the buyer's costs, including the buyer's licensee's commission. But I would also say, you know, for sale by owners, the consumers are smarter than they've ever been before. So I think they kind of know the game, and they're willing to participate and hire a realtor to represent the buyer and pay that fee a lot of the times. But occasionally you'll get one of those where they don't want to participate and pay any additional costs.
I agree. And I'll tell you the converse to this is that, because obviously if the buyer's not paying it, then what? The seller is. And here's my philosophy.
Correct.
On that, Devin, and see if you agree, is that actually you get more use value than you get than you pay in cash value as a seller when you work with a realtor. Now, obviously, this is going to sound self-serving. Here's two realtors talking to each other saying, of course, that's what you would say. But I'll give you an example, just a quick example, and I'll bet you've got plenty in your life. I had a couple come to me, 20-acre tract, and they had a home on it, and they wanted to sell it, and they wanted to sell it for the most recent appraisal, because they'd actually had a transaction with a family member fall through, and so they had this fresh appraisal on the table, and they said, here, we've known your family forever. Would you help us with this transaction and sell this home for us? And Homer, we don't live there anymore. And I said, yeah, give me 2 days, though, because I've got an idea. And I took that 20-acre tract, and I divided it out, and we ended up with 8 lots. And I'm proud to tell you that we actually ended up selling the house on its lot for the amount of the appraisal that they had, and everything else was gravy over the top. And I'll never forget that. And I say to myself, did they actually pay a dollar for my services? Not really. I mean, it was magnified by tens, or a score. I mean, I think, when you're working with somebody like Devin Thomas, Devin, I'm saying this to you, you don't even pay it as a seller. You really get more value than you actually pay in cash.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That knowledge and expertise is really invaluable. But you don't ever get to exemplify that until there's an issue that comes up in the transaction. I tell people sometimes the easy part is finding a buyer to buy the home. It's getting to the closing table. That's the tough part. And, right. you know, that's where, yeah, you know, the knowledge and the expertise of a realtor really comes into play.
Okay. The second thing that I think is most misunderstood would be that you can work with anyone regardless of who's got a listing. And Devin, have you ever had somebody call you and say, well, or somebody you knew bought something from somebody else and you say, well, they had it listed. And do you agree that that is misunderstood?
Absolutely. Even by people that have purchased homes previously, they tend to forget that you don't have to go directly to the listing agent. You can, you know, seek out your own representation and they can show you any home that they're a member of the MLS for, or oftentimes even homes that are not on the market, because I definitely know that not all homes for sale are listed. So they, you know, they can typically negotiate ways to show you any property that really is out there for sale.
Yep. Agreed. Agreed. And then what about the selection of a realtor? I think that, I don't know. And I guess what I mean by that is maybe what I think is a little bit misunderstood is how do you pick that realtor? So we kind of tackle the idea that you don't have to just call the person who's got the sign up on the property, but you can work with anybody. Well, then what? Well, I think that I'd ask around a little bit. And I think what happens a lot, Devin, is that you begin to hear a name or a company name a couple, two, three different times. And I think you should listen to that.
Absolutely. Word of mouth is definitely the best way. You know, somebody that's had personal experience or has had a close family member or friend that's had a personal experience with a realtor. Also, I think matching up to your personality, you're going to be spending a good, you know, 60 to 90 days, sometimes longer with that person. And so, you know, I know that I'm not the best fit for every single buyer or seller out there. So I really like to make sure we're a good fit. You know, if you're a person that, you know, needs to know every single piece of data, you know, surrounding the transaction, make sure you find somebody that's going to be able to deliver that for you. And ask a lot of questions. There's a lot of great resources. Realtor.com has a great piece on how to choose a realtor and really, you know, interview people. Sometimes I tell people if you're not completely comfortable today with, you know, with what we're talking about, interview a couple of people and then, you know, maybe we can come back and see if this is a good fit. But definitely interview people out there, because there's a lot to choose from.
And yes, agreed 100%. And do not make your decision just based solely upon, oh, Realtor X said that my home was worth 20% higher than you did. So because not all comparables are created equal, and not all reports or market analysis are going to be created equal. Tell me, Devin, because I slipped this into the third misunderstood aspect. By the way, you're listening to the Michael Duke Show. I'm Chris Story filling in. My guest is Devin Thomas, president of the Alaska Association of Realtors and broker at Century 21 Eagle River. Devin, I slipped in the word realtor and I didn't say anything else. I didn't give another option. I said, in other words, selection of realtor is huge. Why are you a realtor versus just a real estate licensee? Because I think that's also sort of falls into the misunderstood category.
Definitely. That's a hard concept to grasp nationwide. A realtor is not only somebody that possesses a license to sell real estate in whatever state they're, you know, licensed in, but we subscribe to a code of ethics, which is an additional layer of accountability for us as realtors, accountability and professionalism. And that's really important to me. Our code of ethics are definitely the driving force of our organization, and we have ways to hold each other accountable to those code of ethics. Another thing that we do that is more than just transactional based is we advocate for private property rights. You know, the things, you know, we make sure that flood insurance stays affordable. We make sure that FHA loans are still available to buyers, that, you know, all different sorts of things that advocate for private property rights in our respected areas.
Yeah, agreed 100%. And you know, I just want to give you a quick pat on the back as having been our president of the Alaska Association of Realtors. It's a big job, and it's one of those things that you're a little bit of an unsung hero in that you're leading an organization of a couple thousand people. As you said, advocacy for private property rights. We stand up for your constitutional rights to own and enjoy private property and create wealth. And I think it's one of the most I guess I would say just it's well represented, but maybe it's not exactly the sexiest organization. I mean, you know, it's like we're out there doing this stuff every single day, and it's people like you that that make this organization run. And so thank you from all of us realtors and around the state of Alaska. Thank you, Devin, for your service this last year, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy being past president of the Alaska Association of Realtors soon.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. I'm sure you can. Well, Devin Thomas, what's a great way for people to get in touch with you, either phone number, website, or both? How do we reach you?
Okay, so my phone number, that's the very best way to get in touch with me, 907-354-2685. Or you can also visit me on the web, on our website at teamrogershome.com.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here today and helping us uncover some of these misunderstood aspects of buying. Devin Thomas, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Thank you, Chris.
You got it. It's fun. It's an incredible business. And if you're thinking about it at all, you could reach out to somebody like Devin and just say, you know, is this the right business for me? Is this something maybe I'd be good at? And chances are good if you're curious. I'll tell you how I became a realtor. I was running a pottery business, and I decided I wanted to make a change. And I thought, well, I'm going to become a part-time realtor and a full-time potter. And quickly realized, no, I'm a realtor. It's what I do. You inherit $1 million tomorrow. Do you go to work the next day? I'm Chris Story, filling in for Michael Dukes here on AM 700 KBYR, the aforementioned Michael Dukes Show, produced by Eric Price. Back up at the mothership of KBYR.com. You can stream the show anytime. Let's say you're listening right now and you find out that Suzanne Downing with Must Read Alaska is going to be on at 8:40. And you're like, I don't want to miss that. Well, don't miss it. Put us in your pocket. Put the earbuds in. Pretend to be working. Your boss isn't going to know the difference, right? It's all about productivity at the end of the day. What have you produced today? Doesn't matter that you were listening to the Michael Dukes Show with me, Chris Story, for the entire 3 hours. Be here till 9 o'clock. Hope you will be too. But seriously, if you want I'm not suggesting you go club somebody over the head with a hammer or something to get this $1 million. I'm just saying if you did inherit – isn't the dream to inherit money from somebody you didn't know? Is that just my dream? Is it just me here? I thought we were in the trust tree. I thought I could tell you these deep, dark secrets. But seriously, I would love to inherit money from somebody I don't know. Because the idea of inheriting money from somebody you do know, well, that kind of sucks. It's like, oh, you know, Uncle Ned. Ah, he was my favorite uncle. But here's $1 million. If Uncle Ned had $1 million. But that's the test. Are you living on purpose? Are you doing what you're supposed to be doing here on earth? If you inherit $1 million, you win $1 million, you get this windfall, and you go to work the next day, yeah, you're on purpose. Jim Rohn said, work full-time on your job and part-time on your future fortune. So my thought is, if you answer no to that, like in other words, you win $1 million or you inherit $1 million and you don't go to work the next day, you give your boss the finger and you say, take this job and shove it. If that's what you're going to do, then what job could you imagine having where you would go to work even though you're now an instant millionaire? What job would you say, yeah, I'm going to keep coming back here, and this is what I do. I'm going to do more of it. In fact, I'm going to buy the company maybe or start my own and keep in that same line of work. What is that? What work is that? And whatever it is, get started on the side right now. Do a little bit every day of that. Do something that is moving you closer to where you can answer that test question and say, yeah, I would go to work tomorrow even after having inherited $1 million. Well, what about 50,000? Question I've been asking this morning and been having fun talking to you about is, what would it take for you to give up your PFD forever? You'd never get another check. 274-5297, 274-KBYR. 800, well, actually, it's a free toll-free number, but it's 866-610-KBYR, 866-610-5297. What's your magic number to never, ever get another dividend check again and feel good about it? Mine's 50 grand, and I'm telling you, I would turn it into, I'm not even exaggerating here. I'm not even saying this isn't hyperbolic either. This is real. You could turn that into $1 million through real estate. Yep.
Oh, sure, Chris Story. You're just being self-promoting.
No, I'm being very honest and very frank. Read The Millionaire's Mind by Dr. Stanley Thomas. No, excuse me, Thomas Stanley. Dr. Thomas Stanley, or The Millionaire Next Door. Any of those. Read any book about any self-made millionaire in this country. I guarantee you, with the exception of Zuckerberg, and I just say it that way on purpose, and a few other people like that, we're talking about people that have made their wealth and hold their wealth in real estate. Bottom line. So what would it take for you? 25 grand is probably, I mean, realistically, if this were to ever even happen, we're probably not going to get a check for 25 grand, but and Governor Walker would come in and take half of it, and Representative Paul Seaton would come in and tax you on the other half, so I'd be gone. But all facetiousness aside, hypothetically speaking, what's your number? What would it take for you to cash out? It's time to live like you're selling. I'm Chris Story for Radio Realty here on The Michael Duke Show. Live like you're selling, because one day, guess what? You're going to. So live like you're selling, and I've adapted today's segment of Live Like You're Selling to Live Like You're Selling So You Can Live. That's right. We're talking about health and safety, life and death. Do you have working, and be honest, and if you're still at home, eating breakfast, getting ready to go to work, look around the house as we're talking. If you're already at work or you're driving an Uber or something, think in terms of, are you driving Uber? No, cabbies, don't hate on me. Uber's coming. You can join them. But if you're just think about your house, do you have proper smoke detectors? Do you have enough of them? Or are you like many of the homes that we realtors go into and find wires hanging where a smoke detector once was, or the battery flap is hanging open and the little red thing's hanging down in the little tab and the battery's gone? Do you have proper smoke alarms? I'm serious. A little $5.99 item, $7-$10 saves lives every single year. And you would not believe the number of homes I go into, either as a landlord or as a realtor looking at homes that are for sale, and find a lack of smoke detectors and or smoke detectors that were installed properly at one time in their life and now are disabled simply for the fact that you just didn't have enough 9 volts sitting around the house. It's a big deal. In fact, I'll tell you a personal story right now. One of my rental properties, I just rented the top floor to a fireman. And I'm embarrassed to tell you this. I did not have adequate smoke alarms and a CO detector in this apartment. And so we had just actually sort of remodeled it. And so that's the excuse I'm using. But let me tell you something. It was pretty embarrassing when he said, you don't have what you need here. And he goes, I wonder about the rest of your properties. I said, no, trust me, we've got it. And then trust me, we did a pretty quick situation report and made sure that we were up to snuff on everything. It's life and death. What about your chimney? It's getting, if you're, maybe you're already burning wood, but chimney, wood stove, I run into a lot of people that clean their own chimney. And I applaud that. That's the Alaskan way. That's the American way. We do a lot of things on our own. But are you an expert really on creosote? I mean, do you really know what's going on? What about codes? I'll tell you, my chimney, I get cleaned every year. And every year, the gentleman that does the chimney cleaning tells me I'm in violation of code. And every year I say, thank you very much. I'll deal with it one day. But it's not a safety thing as much as it is a draft thing. The chimney cap is supposed to be, I think, what is it? You probably know, what, 18 inches or 2 feet, whatever, above the peak roof line. And I think that's for draft, just to make sure it doesn't ever get into a situation where you don't draft and it backdrafts or something. Now I'm making stuff up that I don't even know. I just know that it's not high enough. Let me put it that way. The chimney's not high enough. And so I just don't worry about it. I don't want the look of it. It just sounds really stupid, but I like the way the chimney looks now. I don't want it hanging up 6 feet in the air, 4 feet, whatever it is. He wants to put an extension on there. And I've asked him very point blank, look, am I in danger because of this? He goes, no. You have plenty of draft. It's fine. And I said, okay, great. Then I'm going to leave it alone. But I got him in there to look at it, and the same thing with the firebox and so forth. And then codes change, or maybe you thought you installed it with a proper distance from the combustible materials or the wall or whatever. Maybe it's not. So anyway, I definitely recommend that. And then your boiler and furnace or furnace. Have them serviced right now. You might as well. And I want to talk to you if you're an apartment dweller. If you live in an apartment or even a condo, maybe you own your own condo and you're not on the first floor, I'm going to ask you something critical Do you have an escape ladder? Do you have a window ladder, something you could throw over the window? Be sure to latch it on first, then throw it out over the window and climb to safety. Do you know how cheap they are? They're incredibly cheap. They're incredibly cheap. And apartment dwellers or condo owners, do you think your neighbors have working smoke alarms? Are there smoke alarms working? Are there CO detectors working? That's something to bring up to your condo board or bring up to your association manager, apartment manager. You know, how do I know that these people, because I tell you what, if an apartment catches fire and gets fully involved, fully engulfed before an alarm would have gone off or at a point beyond when an alarm would have gone off and people could have gotten out and saved lives, you are in danger as well. So I'm not trying to, you know, turn you into a brown shirt here. So I'm just suggesting you check in with your neighbors, maybe even have an association meeting or something. Let's just educate ourselves on that. And that brings me to another point. My nephew was over for dinner last night. It was my father-in-law's birthday, and we had incredible. You know what we had? I'm sharing this with you because I think you care. You probably don't, but I made, and I'm going to pat myself on the back because nobody else will, the most incredible flank steak on my Weber grill. Barbecued right overlooking the ocean here in Homer. By the way, if you're not in Homer, get here, spend some fall time here, peep at the colors. It's great. The flank steak came out succulent. I've never cooked flank steak on the grill before, on an open charcoal grill. Oh, I think we can say that I mastered it. Why so arrogant? Stop it. Move on already. But my nephew's here, and he says that somebody shot through his apartment 2 days ago. What are you? What happened? Well, a guy was downstairs in the lower unit just below his apartment. The bedrooms are mirrored. So just in the lower bedroom, my nephew's bedroom's right above it. Thank God nobody was home in my nephew's apartment. But the guy had what a Michael Dukes would call a negligent discharge of his 9mm downstairs straight into the ceiling, straight through the floor of my nephew's unit. It kind of angled up, went into the hall, out the hall wall, into the ceiling, and then out the roof. It's an absolute miracle that nobody was injured. So I'd say, I'm not trying to scare you if you live in a second or third floor, but I am suggesting that you get to know your neighbors really well and find out if they have any clue what they're doing with the guns that they may or may not have. But what you really can't control is that the idea of the CO detectors and the smoke detectors. And I suggest that you get a home inspection. That's the best thing you could possibly do right now. If you own your own home or you own your own condo or townhouse, get a home inspection now. Do it now. Get on the books. Get it done before the snow flies. And what you end up with is a list of health and safety things that can be addressed and that you can just pick away at, and a whole bevy of other things that you maybe didn't even know that your home needed. So it's cheap. It's completely affordable. I like to call it cheap insurance. Get a home inspection today, even if you're not selling, because remember, one day you're going to. Might as well have a handle on everything. It's like a health check for your home. Why not just do that? Do it now. Spend, I don't know, I'm going to tell you, in my area, you're going to spend $400 to $500. Maybe it's a little bit less. Maybe it's a little bit more where you are. It doesn't matter. Do it. Spend the money. Get a home inspection, and then just start picking away at things. I've seen people that bought a home and just really didn't ever have a clue that they should change out the filter in the HRV or clean it yearly and so forth. And these are all the things that your home inspector is going to look at. How much life do you have left in your roof? I'd like to know that today before the big windstorm or before I go to sell it and my buyer finds out that, in fact, I'm at the end of my useful lifespan on my roof. These are the kinds of things. Pick the high to low priority items and begin working on the high immediately, and health and safety come first, and then you can work on the other stuff as you go. So there you go. Live like you're selling, because my friend, I'm here to tell you, one day you will be. I guarantee that's what there's life, death, taxes, and yeah, one day you're going to sell your home. All those things fit. You can always find out more from my website, ontopoftheworldradio.com, ontopoftheworldradio.com, and you can contact me there if you've got any questions about any of the things we discuss on Radio Realty, real estate or otherwise. So Rhonda Johnson's going to be coming up in just a little bit. She's with Cornerstone Home Lending. Rhonda Johnson spent probably 20 years. She's worked in mortgages at least 20 years. And we're going to be talking about the credit crunch. And this is so important. I kind of started this story a little bit self-deprecating story earlier about having – we didn't miss a payment on this four-wheeler. What happened was we sent in two. They applied it instead of 2 months to 1 month, and it looked like we had this big black mark. It was Rhonda Johnson that saved our credit, helped counsel us back to incredible credit really quickly, and so we were able to still in time – close on that home we were buying that year. So I consider her to be a miracle worker when it comes to mortgages. I'm writing preparing to write my second novel in November. I'm participating in NaNoWriMo. Have you heard about that? I know Michael Dukes has, and he and I talked about it actually last year, maybe just before or just after I completed the 50,000 word novel. And it's funny because it's one of those things that novel will never see the light of day. If I'm lucky, that novel will never see the light of day. But I'm telling you, it was an incredible, incredible experience to go through. And setting out writing 1,667 words a day, hitting the 50,000th word at the – I'm not even kidding. The last word in the last sentence I was going to write, no matter where it ended up, I figured I'd get close enough. And I looked down at the word count. It was 50,000. It was like, wow. It was eerie. Very eerie. But I thought it would be a good idea to do a little. I was telling Eric earlier that I'm preparing for this NaNoWriMo, and I want to write this next novel. And I'm prepared because I don't read a lot of fiction. I read constantly nonfiction. It's what I read for hours and hours a day. I read nonfiction. And so I thought I want to kind of get myself back into the mindset of some fiction because I figured I better jump in with something. So I started reading Stephen King's It. Why? Why? I don't know. Maybe I was fascinated because I'd heard from other people how great the new movie was, and I haven't seen it. I didn't even see the old movie. I don't like horror movies. I don't like any of this stuff. And so for some reason, I decided It would be a good novel. I can't sleep. Oh, man, what a mistake that was. I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, talk about that and more. Hey, I'm Chris Story along with Eric Price. You're listening to The Michael Dukes Show. We'll be back. My guest right now is Rhonda Johnson. She is with Cornerstone Home Lending. Rhonda, welcome to KBYR. How you doing?
Thanks, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning to you. I've told folks already I kind of had a self-deprecating story about the time I was trying to buy a home 1 year and my credit tanked. And suddenly you and I were in the middle of trying to close this thing. And what am I going to do? You saved my bacon. But before we get into how you can help people with their own credit, what's your journey? You started out with mortgages in Anchorage, if I'm not mistaken.
I did actually back in 1983. So I did mortgages in Anchorage for 12 years. And that's because I grew up down here on the peninsula. But my mother was the magistrate of Homer. And so at that point in my life, I thought I needed to run away and hide in Anchorage for a little while. So then I grew up and moved back down to the peninsula in 95. But yep, I started this career up in Anchorage for about 12 years.
And now you are running Cornerstone Home Lending of Alaska. You've got offices all around the state. Just give me kind of a thumbnail sketch of who is Cornerstone and why did you join forces and help build out this Alaska team?
Right. So I was on my previous job for 18 years and it was fine. It was good. There was nothing wrong with it. But Cornerstone approached me because they're in 39 states nationwide. So they're really quite large and they wanted to expand into Alaska because their entire philosophy is about giving back to our communities. And they just felt that Alaska was a great place to be. So they asked me to help them open up in Alaska. So I decided to take the challenge on, and that's what we've been doing these last couple of years. But I just totally loved the culture of this company and their philosophy of our entire existence is to serve other people and help them with what they need. And that's just what I love to do.
I want to tell a quick story. One time there was a client and I've known Rhonda Johnson now for 15 years. And about 13 or 14 years ago, I was working with a client. In fact, it wasn't even my client as a buyer, but I had a property listed and another licensee in our office was working with this buyer and they were trying to buy this particular home. And the reason I love sharing this story is because it's, I think it really is emblematic of what it is to do what what you do, Rhonda, and that is to make people's dreams come true. And that's not hyperbole. That's not just sort of a slogan. That really is what happened. This woman comes in and she was in tears, and she's trying to buy this home and she's in tears. She's looking for this other agent who happened to be out on another appointment. And so I'm standing there and I'm talking to her, and I said, "Well, what's going on? Come sit down at my desk. Just tell me what the bank told you." And she said, "The bank," and she's saying this through tears, "the bank said no." She goes, "I can't get the home." And I said, "We're going to make a phone call, and I think you're going to get a different answer." And we called you, Rhonda. You on speakerphone chatted with her, made an appointment. She, to this day, 14 years later, will thank me every time I see her, because she's in that home. It was her shot at wealth. It was her shot at home ownership. And had it been denied in that moment because somebody didn't have your expertise and creativity and willingness to take on a challenge, she wouldn't have that. And I think that is, like I said, that's emblematic of what it is that you do. And so I'm of the mind, I don't care where you go, I'm following you, but I really have been thrilled with my experience with Cornerstone Home Lending. So I'm thrilled that you're there, and I'm really grateful that you're here on the program today.
Oh, thank you, Chris. That just gave me goosebumps. That's what I wake up every morning and put my feet on the floor to do, is to make those dreams happen for our clients and to help my referral partners achieve their goals as well by helping these clients. But yeah, that's my entire philosophy. That's why I wake up every morning and do what I do. It just gives me the thrill of a lifetime to be able to say, "We're set to close." I live for those words.
Credit rules the world. And if you want to rule the world or do anything in this world, you got to have good, decent, fair credit. You got to pay attention to it. So, Rhonda Johnson, how often should I be checking my credit, and where ought I be doing that?
Oh, my goodness, Chris. In this day and age, I would say check it frequently and check it often. You know, there's lots of different places. I know Credit Karma is free, and I know lots and lots of people that use it. Now, the scores that you're going to get on Credit Karma are going to be different than what a mortgage lender might see. And the reason why is because there's 8 potentially positive things that can go on your credit report and 44 potentially negative things. So when you're pulling your own report, the algorithms don't know why, and so it uses a very small net to capture information. When you apply for a credit card, it uses a bigger net. A car loan uses a bigger net. And the mortgage loan uses the biggest net possible. So it captures more of those potentially 44 negative things that could show up. So that's one of the reasons why you see different scores than what your lender may see. But what you are going to be tracking by checking your own credit is to make sure that everything is accurate, make sure everything is correct, make sure nothing shows up that you don't know about or don't anticipate. And I'm not only talking about accounts, Chris, I'm talking about who's checking into your credit and why, and did you authorize that? Is there suddenly an address that shows up on your credit report that you've never lived at? Why in the world does that show up? Some of those things are signs that somebody could be messing with you, because if they're checking into your credit and they're sending information to an address you don't know, it could be a sign of identity theft, because nobody's going to apply for credit in your name and have it sent to your actual address, right?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. And those are all good tips. But let's talk to the person that's got no credit. Maybe they're 18, just graduated, or just coming out of college or something, and or they're middle-aged and just have never played the credit world. They're always playing with cash. What's the best way to safely enter this world of building and establishing credit? And I mean safely, I mean responsibly.
Right. So one of my best pieces of advice is to get, if you have zero credit and you're trying to build, whether you're just starting off or you're trying to rebuild after a life event has happened financially, then one of my best pieces of advice is to get a secured credit card. And with a secured credit card, what happens is you'll take $500 or $1,000 and take it to your bank, and you'll put it in your savings account. They will freeze it, so it's sitting there and you can't touch it. But they issue you that Visa card for the same $1,000. You'll charge and pay, and after about a year, as long as you have no late payments, you get to keep your card, but they're going to release your savings security. Now, a couple of things to keep in mind when you get that brand new card, though, is you'll never, ever, ever, ever want to put more than 30% of your limit in charges on that card. So So putting 10 to 30% in charges compared to your limit is the secret to boosting your credit score to highest.
I like secrets, and I like to share them. So what is good credit versus bad? I mean, I kind of have an idea, and just in terms of, okay, in the mortgage world, what's like the minimum score you'd need to qualify for any kind of mortgage, and then what would be considered stellar?
So we can do loans with FHA and VA with credit scores down at 600. Now, keep in mind, though, Chris, that sometimes if you have a 600 credit score, that means that there's other things going on in your report. There may be some collections or late payments. And even though we hit the magic 600 marker, doesn't mean that we can automatically do the loan. That's just the minimum threshold. There's a lot of other factors. But once you get up into the 720s, 760s, 780s, then that's kind of considered that ultimate bucket. Actually, only one in 1,300 people in the United States ever see 800 on their credit scores.
Wow, that's lower than I expected. So you've already touched on kind of what the last thing I really wanted to talk about, I guess, with respect to credit, and that's how to fix it. I mean, obviously, you know, the secured lines of credit and so forth, but let's address one of those life events. Maybe you've you've had a foreclosure, or maybe it's not even that drastic. Maybe it's just been a series of lates, and maybe you're kind of, you get at the upper limits of your cards and so forth. Steps to fixing. I mean, obviously you can hire somebody to help repair your credit, but is there a way you can just do it on your own and kind of get that information without going to a concierge service?
Right. So I do a lot of credit counseling for clients, and it's one of my passions because you're required to play the credit scoring game these days, but nobody gives you the rules to the game. So I have a pamphlet, a booklet that I use, and I give everybody the rules to the game, give you some of those secrets on how to do it. The biggest thing that I see, Chris, because your balance to limit on your credit cards is 30% of your score, compared to how well you pay your bills is 35%. So it's the second biggest factor of your credit score. And if you don't have a credit card at all, you're going to lose up to 255 points of your score. So if you find yourself in with some late payments, then the first thing, of course, is to set up all of your accounts, your credit cards especially, to no matter what, make the minimum payment due on auto pay. So no matter what, that minimum payment is made, get that payment schedule current at all times. Any late payments on your credit report in the most recent 12 months are going to hit your score very, very hard. And a late payment can cost you 50 points. The next thing you want to do is, if your balances to your limits are very high, I usually suggest with making the minimum payments on all of them, and then take your lowest balance card and come up with your budget for what you can spend to pay that one off as quickly as you can. Then you add that payment that you were making on that small card to the next biggest card and put everything you can into that card and get it paid off, and just kind of snowball it up so that you've got more and more and more money going towards those larger accounts later on.
Even if you don't want to extend yourself and get into, you know, mortgages and different things, just having control over your own credit and your destiny and giving yourself the options makes a big difference. Rhonda, we've been asking people this morning, what would it take to buy you out of the dividend? What amount would Rhonda Johnson accept and never receive another dividend for the rest of your life, you or Roger or any of your kids?
Oh, my gosh, Chris, I don't know. I guess I never really thought about that. I think that the annual dividends are just a cool thing. So it's something that people can plan on every year. It's something that they can plan to either do something fun or do a home improvement, or, you know, it's always just before Christmas. It's just after school. So it comes at a really great time of year where it just really helps a lot of clients. This time of year, we get a big boost of home buyers that are finally in the position where they could use those dividends from their family and put as down payment or closing costs to buy a home. So this is always a really exciting time of year for them. I don't know. I think the annual dividends are the way that they should stay.
All right. Well, that's sort of a wet blanket, but you're spot on. I mean,
oh,
quickly, though, just real quick, you can use dividend income as income, right, for helping people qualify? The PFD is allowable income?
Absolutely. I take the last two-year average and divide that out by 24 months, and then I add that in as monthly income for you.
I would love to have your take, Rhonda Johnson. I'd love for you to tell our elected officials how important that annual dividend is, and keep their hands off it, because it really does make a difference. You and I see that in people's lives every day. RhondaJohnson.net is the website, RhondaJohnson.net. You can reach out to Rhonda anywhere in the state of Alaska. You want a mortgage, Cornerstone Home Lending is there, 252-5682-907, 252-5682. Rhonda Johnson, my friend, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great day.
All right, you too. I still want the 50 grand, though. I'll take it. I'll take the 50 grand. And this speaks not to my I don't disagree with Rhonda. I mean, of course. I mean, she's right. She and I see this every day. We see people that on their ability to finance or so forth, or to come up with a down payment or cover their own closing costs or something, the dividend makes a big difference. But my concern, and kind of where I come up with this question or this thought, is, you know, essentially, it's kind of going away already. I want to ask you a question, and this might be too personal, but I think that we know each other well enough. I can ask this of you. What's stopping you from whatever it is you want? And I'm somebody that I'm of the community that makes excuses for myself, so I can say this with impunity. What's stopping you from being fit? What's stopping you from being rich, successful, happy? Maybe you're happy, but maybe you want to be happy more often than you are. Well, I catch myself making excuses constantly, and I pride myself on being upbeat. I'm optimistic. I wake up on top of the world every day. I love my life. I love the career that I've chosen. I love the investments that my wife and I have made. I love the investment in our marriage that we've made to each other for 28 years. I'm happy most of the time, but I'll tell you, I make a lot of excuses, and I guess it's maybe a better word would be say I justify a lot of stuff, and every now and then I catch myself making a pretty big excuse, and I'm fortunate. I was going to say lucky, but I'll put it into the fortunate category to say I'm fortunate to be married to somebody that won't let me do that. Tiffany will not let me get away with making excuses for very long. She'll kind of, like, you know, for a moment or two, she's empathetic, and then if she sees that I'm going down this rabbit trail of justification and justifying in my own mind and sort of kind of, you know, crossing my arms and pointing at everybody but me, she'll call me out on it. And so just recently, I just wanted to share this. Recently, had a pretty nasty business situation. Not that I couldn't handle. I kind of thrive on that. That's when the warrior in me comes out, and I'm okay with it. I solve problems. It's what I do. As a realtor, as a owner of a company, owner of properties, owner of a production company, I'm a professional problem solver. That's what I do. I'm satisfied with that. I like it. And so I solved this problem, but it was particularly nasty. And it was the other party that got nasty and made it nasty. And that's fine. I dealt with that person, and I understood this person is a warrior, and they don't really have a lot of philosophy and no poetry in their life, no artistry, no creativity, just sheer warrior. And a lot of times those kind of people just end up hitting the wall. And if you stand between them and the wall, you get hit in the process. But that's okay, because my client got the fair shake. I ensured that the business transaction for my client came out as it should be. And it was completely the other person's fault. Nobody disagrees with that. Even Tiffany, the person that holds me accountable, even she agreed. Oh, yeah, it's this other person's fault. Absolutely. But then she asked me what I consider to be a killer question. Couldn't you, she's asking this of me, to me, couldn't you, Chris, have anticipated this? In fact, shouldn't you have seen this coming? And my butt just got bigger and bigger, and I couldn't come up with anything other than to say, yeah, you're right. I think that's if you're fortunate enough to have somebody in your life that holds you accountable like I do, I say here, embrace that person and say thank you, because like the sculptor, they're chiseling away the excess and they're getting down to the beauty, to the art, to what should be there, and to the best you can possibly be. And that means a lot to me. But I thought that was so real, and it's still palpable in my mind, this, and I could just easily put myself back into that place of being angry at that other person And I had every right to do it. I had every right to be upset with them. I mean, they did nasty. They did it. They didn't have to do me like that, but they did. And Tiffany's killer question, couldn't I have anticipated this? Yeah, absolutely. Incidentally, Brian Tracy has an incredible book called No Excuses. Brian Tracy's written something. He's prolific. He's written something like 70 books. I've got a dozen of his books. I don't have them all, but that one I like. That one I grab off the shelf fairly often, kind of quick, short, snappy chapters, and I'll read up a couple just to remind myself, just to sort of self-edit and self-audit myself. Am I making excuses? Where in my life am I making excuses? Because they hold you back. And you can justify and mollify. You can sort of scratch the itch. And ultimately, though, that's a disaster. That's a recipe for disaster and more unhappiness and more of what you don't want. Do you want Rebecca Logan to be your next mayor here in Anchorage? President of the Alaska, this is in Must Read Alaska. This is a couple-day-old article. You probably already commented on this. But I was curious because I liked what she had to say. Rebecca Logan files for Anchorage mayor. She wants to reduce the alarming rate of crime that has so many residents living in fear. Thank you very much. What about the year of kindness? No, this is the year let's focus on getting rid of crime. Focusing on delivering core services to citizens without increasing taxes, like that. Strengthening the private sector to boost the Anchorage economy and reduce unemployment. I like that. I mean, what's to like about this woman? Now, I'm still a massive Amy Dabosky fan, and I don't know. I should ask her at some point. I don't know. Maybe you know. Is she going to run for mayor again? I'd love to see her do that. But so far, from what I'm reading here in MustReadAlaska.com, I like what Rebecca Logan has got to say. So curious if you've got any comments on that, 274-5297. 274-5297. Also taking your calls on the PFD. What would it take for you to sell out? I was referring to it earlier, selling your soul. Roy called me out on that. Said he wouldn't sell his soul, but he would sell out for, what did Roy say, 50 to 100,000. Rodney's okay with 50,000. I'm okay with 50,000. What about you? Get rid of the dividend, never get another check. 274-KBYR. 274-5297. Next chapter. That's right. Rogoff tumbles into bankruptcy. I love good reporting. I love good writing. And I want to go to this, see if I can find it. This is written by Suzanne Downey, Must Read Alaska. I published a few days ago, actually 2 days ago. This is about the Alaska Dispatch plummeting. And where does she write in here? She says something about, and this, I should have highlighted it. Oh, here it is. The lawsuit involving Alice Rogoff, Alaska Dispatch News, eviction from the Northway building. It pertains to one of the lawsuits involving the wealthy East Coast heiress who made a splash in Alaska. That's so subtle and delicious if you remember. And I'm glad she's fine. She survived her crash in Halibut Cove where she splashed into the cove. But, you know, this that kind of subtlety that I like about Must Read Alaska. That's good. It's funny. The Alaska Dispatch is, it's something new is coming out of the ashes of the disaster that Rogoff was. But I really resent papers anymore. And I don't resent the news. I just resent the printing of the paper and delivering to the door. I mean, no offense if you're a newspaper person, you got to hold the paper. You got to get it on your doorstep. Or you're part of that process. And I'm talking about your job. I don't mean to be unsympathetic to that if that's how you make your living. But what I do mean to say is the Dispatch here several months ago started this campaign where they were just kind of giving away the papers, trying, I guess, as a desperate last grasp or last gulp of air before they drowned to get people reading. I don't want it. I resented this free paper showing up on my door. I'm like, God, what is this mess? Come on already. I got enough fire starter. I don't need any more. Anything I want to know, I'm going to know because I listen to KBYR. I go to the KBYR Facebook page, ADN even, the Alaska Dispatch Online, Must Read Alaska, Juneau Empire, Peninsula Clarion, the Homer News. I don't want your paper. I want the news. I just don't want your physical paper. And I don't think she understood that, she being Alice Rogoff. I really don't. I don't think she understands business. I think unearned wealth was put to work here. And I say that with all, I was going to say with all due respect, but I don't have any, so I can't say that. But I will say that I think that it's an example of business. I love Marcus Lemonis. Do you ever watch The Prophet? Incredible program on CNBC, worth watching, worth DVRing and watching. He could come in and take over the Dispatch, the Alaska Dispatch, Marcus Lemonis. He's a founder of Camping World. It's a multi-billion-dollar company on the stock exchange. He's done an incredible job. He's of Libyan descent, adopted by American parents and moved to America when he was young. He's an incredible business mind, would come in and look at the Alaska Dispatch and completely oriented. I don't care about the economy. I don't care about the governor. I don't care about the crime rates. I don't care about any of that. He could come in and make that business profitable in a heartbeat. But he's earned it. He's got the chops. He's a businessman, not somebody who's just been handed a bunch of money and said, hey, go have some fun. Go play around and see what you can do with this little paper in Alaska. No, you'll destroy any business that way. And it is a business. On this media panel, I'll be talking with Suzanne Downing about that. She's the publisher of Must Read Alaska. She and I were on a panel together, and there was a couple of people from the Alaska Dispatch with us there. It is a business. I mean, there's no two ways about it. You can't go about suggesting that media is anything other than a business. And if you approach it from that purest puritanical way and the poetry, so we go back to the philosopher, poet, warrior philosophy, you cannot approach it purely. You can't let the poets make the decisions. Let me put it that way. You can't let the poets make the financial decisions in any kind of a business. You've got to have a warrior at the helm. You've got to, if it's going to be a successful business. And that's why Must Read Alaska is a success and is going to continue to grow. And I think, dare I say, eclipse the Dispatch. And ironic, and I, well, I'll save that for Suzanne Downing. I'll save that more of that conversation for her. But I love this article. Next chapter, Rogoff tumbles into bankruptcy. Mustreadalaska.com. Lots of great articles up there, including the quote of the week from Les Guerra on class warfare. Absolutely classic. Also, we'll be taking your calls later in the program about the income tax. Do you think it's going to happen? I talked to somebody just a couple of days ago, and they were saying, you know, Alaska never should. And this is a conservative person, mind you. Alaska never should have gotten rid of the income tax. It was probably one of the biggest mistakes we made. We never should have gotten rid of it because, you know, now it's difficult to implement. And I'm like, wait a minute, just from where I sit, and I'm not in Juneau. I don't have my hands in the pie. I don't have my hands on the purse strings or anything, but I look at this and say $3.5 billion shortfall last couple of years in a row. We're doing something wrong on the spending side of this. We got to control that. You and I cannot tax ourselves into prosperity. We just simply can't. It's an impossibility. It just isn't going to happen. I want to talk a little bit also later on about SB 91. What do you think about that? What do you think about the crime in your neighborhoods? It's everywhere. It's rampant. I don't want to let people off the hook and say, oh, it's a piece of legislation that's causing them to create crime. I am suggesting that from the people that I've talked to, a recent retiree from the Alaska State Trooper has been very vocal with me, and I'll try to share some of his thoughts about SB 91 and, in fact, what led to his retirement as a result of it. He said, forget it. I'm out. I'm just not going to do it anymore. Hey, listen, I'm Christopher Story. Thank you for being here on the Michael Duke Show. I hope Michael's having a great time with that new little grandbaby. You can stream the program at KBYR.com. More to come here on the Michael Duke Show. I am Chris Story, filling in for Michael Dukes here on the AM 700 KBYR Michael Dukes radio program. Good morning, Liz. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks so much for having me. And I guess, was pretty impressed by that headline, too. I'd never heard that before. I'm so flattered.
Very nice. I guess it's in your contract. I guess I need to have a better agent. Liz, I've got a question for you, and this is I want to get to your headlines and find out what we need to know around Alaska. But what prompted you to become a journalist and TV journalist at that? What was it something from childhood that you always wanted to do, or what was your journey like to get here?
Well, like a lot of my colleagues, you know, I remember growing up watching the news and seeing reporters out in the field in different places around the world. And I just thought that was so cool that they got to be where things were happening. And it's what still fascinates me about this job is that I get paid to go out and learn things every day and tell people what I learned at the end of the day. So it seems like a great gig to be kind of an eternal student and always out learning new things. I feel like I get to try on different professions daily as I'm out just picking people's brains about what they do, why they do what they do, and how they do it. And then I get to, at the end of every day, tell people what I've learned and share that with them. So that inspired me to want to go into this field, and specifically TV, because I think it's really cool to be able to show people what's happening in a compelling way using visuals and sound. And I think that live interviews, there's just nothing more powerful than a live interview, especially when we're talking about people who are making policies that affect all of our lives, being able to ask them those questions and hear from them and see them, you know, as they're talking about it, I think is very powerful as well.
I think that's really great. And you are, you know, with all candor, you're very good at what you do. And I think you paint excellent pictures, both with what you say and write and how you approach a story. And then, of course, as you said, the moving picture. And I think it's compelling. And I think it's more challenging in a different way than maybe a radio journalist or a print journalist. It's got its own challenges. Can I ask you real quickly, though, since I've got you here and I'm always curious about what people like you. So in your industry, what do you guys think about the movie Anchorman with Will Ferrell? Do you find it funny?
I really enjoyed the first one. The second one that came out, I thought was, you know, they took it a little bit too far. You know, they kind of stretched the storyline. But I really enjoyed the first one. And you know, sometimes we kind of refer to those Anchorman moments, you know, when you're anchoring and you get something in the prompter that you weren't expecting, or somebody changed, you know, something that was written in there about a story. And you kind of have that, like, deer in headlights moment where you realize, anchors, you know, a lot of times when you're anchoring, it's very easy to just kind of read what's in there and not, you know, if something got changed at the last minute, not realize it. So I think that there's kind of some undertones in there that are kind of true to TV news. Of course, it's a comedy, and I really, yeah. I did enjoy the first one.
That's great. Me too. Yeah, we're on the same page as far as the second one. But yeah, who put a question mark on the teleprompter? I'm Ron Burgundy. All right, Liz Raines, tell us what's a headline that you think we need to know this morning as we start our day?
Well, one that's going to affect everybody is that Governor Walker has rolled out this new tax proposal, and he's asking lawmakers to take it up in a special session next month. This is their fourth special session, by the way, this year, which is a new record for lawmakers ever having this many special sessions in 1 year. But Governor Walker says it's important to go ahead and get this structure in place. He wants to go ahead and start trying to fill the state's budget gap using a tax, and this tax in particular, he skirted around calling it an income tax, but he's calling it a tax on Alaskan wages. A payroll tax is I think the term that his administration is sticking by now. And what it does is it takes 1.5% of your wages up to 2 times whatever that year's dividend is. So it sounds a little bit complicated, but I think the idea here is that you have an income tax that will be progressive, but still has a cap on it to keep anybody from paying above twice whatever that year's dividend is. And I think that they're trying to bring together different swaths of the political spectrum with this approach. Those on the Republican side, more conservative side, who'd opposed an income tax because they said that it shouldn't, that it taxes the fruits of the labor of Alaskans. You know, here is kind of a trade-off with your dividend. So the argument is that those wealthier Alaskans are simply paying back their dividend. And then it's on the more liberal side with Democrats, making it a progressive income tax, so that the concern that we'd heard from them about an income tax being unfair and that it taxing lower income Alaskans. Here, essentially, the argument is, well, it's just simply deducting a little bit from their dividend because they can use their dividend to offset that tax.
What are you hearing? By the way, you're listening to The Michael Duke Show. Chris Story filling in for the big guy, talking with Liz Raines with KTVA-TV. What are you hearing from any legislators, members of the legislature you're talking to about, A, this approach, number one, and then I guess I would say second to that would be this concept of these never-ending special sessions. Are you getting any feedback from the people that are actually having to go do this work?
Yeah, and I can tell you, Chris, there's not a lot of enthusiasm for this proposal specifically from either end of the spectrum. Democrats say, well, this isn't fair because you've you've got people who, if they live on trust funds or they're not working, or if they're, you know, on the wealthy end, they pay just the same amount as somebody who's maybe more towards the upper middle class. And so they're not sure that this is what they would consider to be a fair proposal. And then we're hearing from Republicans who say, this is an income tax. And we've already said, you know, especially the Senate has already said no to an income tax. And so it's going to be a tough sell with them. There's a feeling, I think, on both sides that this proposal just doesn't really meet the bar. So really the only enthusiasm we're seeing for this next special session is around this bill that tweaks certain parts of SB 91. That's that big criminal justice overhaul that lawmakers passed last year. And there is a willingness kind of across the board to make some changes to SB 91. For the most part, we found that lawmakers agree things need to be changed. There were some unintended consequences from that bill. And so we're hearing a general consensus that they're excited to go back and tweak some of that.
I'm going to be in Juneau next month doing an auction for a group and doing a presentation. I might just fix this myself if I have to. And I will roll up my sleeves and fix this when I get down there next month. Well, Liz, on a brighter note, anything else happening around Alaska you want people to know?
The news is kind of ever-changing. So, at the same time, yesterday we had a big story about some crime stats that are coming out. And so that kind of pairs with the SB 91 debate. We've heard from a lot of people. There was a town hall on Monday hosted by Representative Charisse Millett, where we heard from a lot of people across the city that came to that they feel like they're not comfortable in their communities right now. They notice an uptick in vehicle theft and burglaries, and they're concerned that SB 91 is allowing some of these lower level crimes to go unpunished, and that therefore people are kind of escalating to bigger and worse crimes. And that was confirmed somewhat in a crime statistic report that came out by the FBI. They do these annual uniform crime reports, and it shows that we have seen an uptick in theft across the board here in Alaska, and we're actually going against the national trend when it comes to that. So I think that's going to play a key role in this debate that we're hearing now over Senate Bill 91, and what, if anything, lawmakers should do to try to curb that trend. So I think that, you know, we've heard residents saying that anecdotally. Well, now we have some data that actually proves it from the FBI.
Liz Raines, while you're my guest here for a few more minutes, I'd love to ask you this, and I'm not asking you to inject yourself into the fray of the conversation, but your take on how do you go about establishing. We hear a lot about fake news. We hear a lot about things going around on social media that are provenly later and just patently false and completely made up. What's your best advice to the average citizen, besides, of course, catching everything you do? Besides that, just what's your best advice to the average person out there just trying to figure out what's true and not? And as we assess and look at news, kind of putting on those goggles of, well, how do you go about assessing what's a real story and what's actually happening?
Well, that's where I think, looking at the sources, and that's where we have a high bar as journalists, too. To report where we're getting our information, link back to those original sources so that people can see for themselves, read for themselves. And so I would encourage people to hold journalists to a high standard in that regard, you know, really demand where are the sources on these stories. I've seen a couple stories myself where, you know, we just hear, you know, sources say in the reporting. While it's true that as journalists, you know, sometimes we will accept an anonymous source to protect their identity under certain circumstances. But for the most part, the standard should be that we need to reveal where we're getting our information and that we should be citing our sources always. And that's a high standard that we should be held to, both internally and by the public. So I would say that's, you know, the journalist is merely the conduit between the public and the information that the public needs. And so, when you're looking at a story, I would encourage people to look back to original sources if they have any questions about a story.
Yeah. I think that's great advice and a good tip. And it's so easy. We look at headlines and you can really, and you can kind of, you can steer the arc of the conversation or debate of a particular topic by headline. And headline, you got to write a good headline. You want to get somebody's attention. But at the same time, I find myself just scanning headlines all day long. And then I realize, wait a minute, what do I really know about that subject? I cannot base my opinion on a headline. And that's so tempting because, oh, did you hear that such and such? Well, wait a minute. In the third paragraph of the story or later on in the report, you would have seen, read, or learned that, oh, that's actually not quite true. And the lead was maybe buried in there. So that is interesting, though. But coming up with a good headline, I mean, you got to get the headline that gets people's attention, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the tricky part. And, you know, that's where we really, you know, have an obligation to boil our stories down into a few words, but in a way that's compelling, you know, so people kind of get the heart of the story and can decide whether or not they want to read it. But still accurate, you know, and that can be really tricky. And sometimes it takes some careful wordsmithing, to boil things down into a headline that, you know, fits on the page and that people, it will grab their attention and that they'll want to read, because, you know, now we're finding young people, and in general, people are consuming news in a really different way than they were just a few years ago. You know, you mentioned people looking on social media and consuming their news that way. And that's really the trend that we're seeing. And it's caused us to have to shift how we work as well, in trying to compete for people's attention on social media. And now people are not necessarily watching an entire newscast. They're just wanting to go and choose the stories that interest them and watch those selectively. And so, now we have to work even harder, to try to showcase our stories and make them compelling. And so you're absolutely right. A good headline is very, very important.
And I'm contractually obligated to say this, the lovely Liz Raines, KTVA.com. Thank you so much. You can find you on Facebook as well, and you appear to be pretty active there. And thank you for all that you do, and thanks for being part of the Michael Dukes program this morning.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's always got to be disappointing to somebody who's a regular guest to find out, oh, Michael Dukes is gone. Who is this? Chris Story. I don't want to talk to him. I want to talk to Michael Dukes. But I sincerely enjoyed chatting there with Liz Raines. She is awesome. So, yeah, it's interesting. SB 91, I'm hopeful that Senator Mia Costello, is able to get that struck down. I hope that she's able to get that repealed. I thought it was interesting that the ACLU was taking her a little bit to task, just saying, hey, wait a minute, you voted for this, and now you're kind of hiding behind that. And no, she was right out front. Yeah, I voted for it. It's a mistake. It's a big mistake. SB 91 is not working, in my opinion. I did talk to a retired state trooper, in part retired because of SB 91. So forget it. We're not getting backed. We're not getting the funding, and we're not able to lock up the bad guys. In fact, this trooper that I spoke to, he actually arrested a guy in the Nilchik area after a 90 plus mile an hour high speed chase. Finally, got the guy and had to take him at gunpoint. And if I'm not mistaken, I know the vehicle was stolen that he was driving erratically and recklessly. I know that vehicle was stolen. But at the same time, if I'm not mistaken, there were either guns in the vehicle and or on his person when he was arrested, freed just a month or two later, and then went into a business in Anchorage and shot the owner and took the cash. Something's got to change. I mean, you know, and it's sort of like these NFL buffoons. That are you pick any of these besides NASCAR, any of these sports people that somehow feel as though their celebrity translates into wisdom that you and I should ascribe to. And I get a little frustrated with that. And then I realize, wait a minute, it's not them. It's you. You give them the power. We give these NFL folk the power to run with it. We're the ones that are paying their $16 million plus dollars, $30, $40 million a year, whatever it is. They're huge contracts. We're the ones that are paying this. I only wish I was part of the NFL. I feel like going and getting the NFL ticket just so then I can cancel it in protest to what they're doing. This political mumbo jumbo is just absolutely ridiculous. Same with SB 91. Be that bill or not, it's up to you and I to determine our own future and safety. I hope you're well armed. I am. I'm wearing a gun right now. I'm Chris Story, filling in for Michael Dukes. Eric Price is your producer. KDYR.com is the website. Stream the rest of the show there. Come on. The time is 40 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour. Now on the line with me is the publisher and the founder, the proprietrix of Must Read Alaska. Her name is Suzanne Downing. Suzanne, thanks for being here with me today. How are you?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you. I'm calling in from Ketchikan today.
Oh, what's the, tell us a little weather report. Is it raining, perchance?
Well, no, good guess. Actually, no, they've just taken a break from that today, so it's pretty nice. It's cloudy, but yesterday it rained like 1.5 inches, so we made up for
that's,
it.
Yeah, no kidding, that's enough. Well, listen, Suzanne Downing and I were on a media panel here in Homer recently, and I really wanted to talk to you, Suzanne, about that, and I had this epiphany after the program. Unfortunately, it was after the program. I had this epiphany that here's you with Must Read Alaska. Here's me with my On Top of the World radio program. We had Charles Woolforth with the ADN, Tom Keziah with the ADN. We had the editor of the Homer News and a couple of other folks with us. And here's Charles Woolforth saying, almost as though anybody who runs a blog is basically a pimple-faced nobody in their parents' basement wearing pajamas, more or less. I'm paraphrasing. That's not an exact quote. But more or less, that's the impression. It's like, you know, these are sort of losers in their pajamas, and they're not really journalists. And I thought to myself later, how ironic. It was the Alaska Dispatch, started by Tony Hoplinger and Amanda Coyne, that ended up consuming and buying with the aid of Alice Rogoff's money, of course, the actual Daily News, which became the Alaska Dispatch, the print edition. I just, was that irony lost on you, or did you pick up on that too?
Well, it was kind of funny because I think Tony and Amanda probably, they started the Alaska Dispatch at their kitchen table, and it only grew, and then they were working 18 hours a day like I do. And then Alice Rogoff came along as an angel investor, basically, and bought them up. And they ended up with minor shares. I think they ended up owning 10%, so 5% each. And then, of course, as we know, what happened after that is they made a good go of it. They said the print edition was dead, that the Dead Tree edition was dead, and that the digital news was the way of the future. So they tried that for a while, and they grew their staff, and they really harvested a lot of people from the Anchorage Daily News to write for them. Some of the very best writers they had went over, and they grew their stuff. And finally, she decided, well, I can't support this any longer. We need a print edition. That's where the money is. So then she made the offer on the Anchorage Daily News to consume that. And of course, we all know what happened after that. She started investing so much money into that and borrowing that she ended up in bankruptcy, Chapter 11. Where that allowed the Binkley Company to come in and essentially buy the newspaper that she had purchased for $34 million. They bought it for $1 million, plus they got the whole mess. Boy, what a mess they inherited. Mm-hmm. And then after that, the rest of her assets have gone into Chapter 7, which is the total loss cause category, where you know the creditors are not going to get paid. And there are a lot of creditors. They're small businesses. These are people who, you know, they too started their businesses on their kitchen table. And so, you know, God bless the kitchen table for starting business. Now, in my defense, I have an office in Midtown Anchorage, which happens to be right across the street from the Alaska Dispatch News. I'm in the Calais building. I'm in the North building. I'm on the third floor and actually have a real office. So Tony, Charles Woolworth kind of got it wrong. He started dismissing all the bloggers as though they're in their pajamas. No, that's just not the case. There are a lot of us out there that are successful and get up. And I actually have a joint, a shared content agreement with the Alaska Journal of Commerce, as well as with Craig Medrin, who is another writer, so that I can use their content and they can use mine. And yeah, so, yeah.
Well, it's not lost on me that there exists in some circles, and not all. I mean, there are some really just fantastic journalists out there. And I think that journalism plays an incredible role in society today and probably always has and always will. But I think there's this elitism of sorts that I can't quite put my head around, because I think it's people like you, it's people that are willing to, well, I'll give you an example. There's a film documentary film festival here in Homer. And I went to see one the other day. It's called Letters from Baghdad. It's an interesting take on this gal, Margaret Bell. Anyway, had a lot to do with Iraq and the establishment of Iraq as a country and so forth. But bottom line is there was a preview for a picture called City of Ghosts, and it's about citizen journalists in Syria and the important role that they're playing at their own peril. And many of them are actually in harm's way, and their family are in harm's way. And it just reminds me that information is really important. But I think what that media panel missed, Suzanne, the opportunity that was missed there was, how do we go about segregating the difference between fake stories that are propagated to push an agenda that are literally just faked? I mean, literally just out of whole cloth made up, versus somebody's comment or viewpoint or point of view that enters the fray of their conversation. So there's got to be a difference between those two.
Well, if we step back and look at the course of history of newspapers, 150 years old or so, you know, newspapers all the way back in the day, they ginned up wars to cover them. They ginned up a result of battles. They ginned up a lot of things. Newspapers have had fake news around for a long, long time. And so fake news is not just the purview of the digital era. It's been around. I mean, there's lots of documentation about what happened in the, you know, early days of newspapers with the Pulitzer paper out of New York. So we're making kind of a big deal about this now is only because we have access to so much more information. But we all have the ability to cross-reference, and I think it's up to us as consumers of news to be wary. I know that when I mentioned on the panel things that are seem outlandish, you should check them out. Check the original source material out. See if you can find an original material out there that's in a newspaper, perhaps, or in a, for instance, a journal of some sort that's been vetted, and just don't take things for at face value. Because I was looking at this one story, and I mentioned on the panel about this post-birth abortion, in other words, baby killing. That's what that is. This is not a topic I write about a lot. I don't write a lot about abortion. But when you see this this headline about how medical ethicists are saying that killing babies is okay if they should have been aborted to begin with, you kind of want to check that out because it doesn't even seem true. But I looked and I found a journal out there, the Journal of Bioethicists something, and there is an academic paper that postulates that babies that should have been aborted but then went to full term and were born, that it would be ethical to terminate their lives, in other words, kill them. And I don't know how these guys end up being ethicists when they write this stuff. But I ended up not writing about that topic, but that's what I would expect others to do, is to just check it out, because sometimes people twist things to their point of view, and everybody does have a bias. So these blogs out there, they love to go with headlines and generate traffic, and that's how they get their money, is big, bold headlines generating traffic. Now, you look at something like Drudge Report, which is the most the wildly successful aggregation of news. It's just a bunch of really, really edgy headlines. You click through, you go to the New York Post, or you go to the Daily Caller, or you go to Breitbart or something else. Sometimes you go to the Washington Post, and in fact, I think Drudge drives more traffic to the Washington Post than any other single source. Sometimes Drudge has a lot of fun with the headlines, and his headlines will have a point of view that maybe the story didn't support. The story has a different point of view. But in fact, if you step back and say, you know what, he's right. His headline does have a real valid point there that maybe the Washington Post missed. So.
Yeah, I agree. My guest is Suzanne Downing. She writes and publishes Must Read Alaska, mustreadalaska.com. And I think you are becoming, Suzanne, and I mean this in all sincerity, I think you are literally becoming a force to be reckoned with here in Alaska. And I think that it's the tone with which you write. It's your combination of also great headlines. And I find that there's meat and content in the story that supports where you're headed with the headline. And good writing, and I think that you know you just can't hide that. I mean, that's gonna come out and shine. Good writing, and I think you've got a lot of integrity and class with how you handle your blog, your news outlet. I don't care what you call it. It's awesome and it's good stuff.
Thank you.
And I know that you've worked with a lot of folks, and you have a real deep background in journalism, and that's what struck me, and it continues to strike me, is the elitism or the separatist kind of mentality that there's different levels. I think personally, if you speak right, broadcast or work with integrity, and you're actually trying to advance a conversation, I see more power to you. And whether that's in print or not, I don't know. You probably didn't hear, but I was saying earlier, I resent getting a paper delivered to my door. And the dispatch tried that for a while a couple months ago. I just resented it. I was like, God, get this paper off my doorstep. What are you doing? I've already read this. I read this an hour ago. What are you doing?
You know, the elitism is sort of baked into this whole world of journalism, because journalism is an odd thing. They judge the rest of us, basically. You know, we're all being judged by journalists every single day, and we're all being challenged. And so if you get arrested for a crime, they're going to report on the crime. You are the alleged perpetrator of the crime. We use the word alleged, but still they're going to report on it. And they're in a position of judgment. That it's hard for them to have friends outside of the field, in the same way it's hard for police officers to have friends outside of their field or judges to have friends outside of their field, because they're in a position of casting judgment on people. So I think there becomes this little clubbiness that surrounds journalists, and they start holding themselves in a slightly different light, that they're better than the rest of us. Well, I know this because I was in journalism for many, many years. I was in business first, and then I went into journalism. That's kind of my background. I was the editor of the Juno Empire, and you get the feeling a little bit like you kind of got to hold a standard, and you get a lot of criticism in that field. People are always criticizing you, so you hunker down a little bit, and you know that only your fellow journalists can understand you. So that develops the mentality of elitism. And what is important about these blogs that are developing is that they don't have that, other people around them to tell them kind of, well, that you maybe went too far, or check your facts on that. That's not how I remember it. So if you're like I am, which is you're writing and you're also editing yourself, you don't have that second set of eyes. So there's a little bit of a danger there. And you have to be careful with blogs, because you want to make sure that the source is really sticking to the truth and that they're accurate. And that's hard to do because we all have a bias. And even news writers, all news writers have a bias. It's so obvious. But in newsrooms, you would kind of hope that people would be sort of checking each other's biases. But unfortunately, they're reinforcing each other's biases.
Well, I like your bias, Suzanne Downing, and keep it up. Mustreadalaska.com. Thank you so much.
Talk to you again. Bye.
Okay, talk to you later. Yeah, she's awesome. Isn't it interesting, both talking with Suzanne Downing and Liz Raines, sources. That's the key to discovering that what you're reading, you're actually reading something legitimate. And I think that means a lot more than a pedigree. So thank you to all my guests today. Devin Thomas, president of the Alaska Association of Realtors, Rhonda Johnson with Cornerstone Home Lending, Liz Raines with KTVA Alaska, and Suzanne Downing. And thank you to all of you who participated in the show. I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. We're going to talk about a positive morality and how you can make $1 million in your own backyard here on The Michael Duke Show.